Every week here on KNKX, we tell stories from around the Northwest on our show Sound Effect. It's where we get our next story. Sound Effect host Gabriel Spitzer has more.
Harborview is a center for research across a bunch of different fields, and among others, it houses the headquarters for the University of Washington's Department of Global Health. The department has tendrils that reach into practically every corner of the planet. Just one guy, Dr. Judd Walson, has worked extensively in Thailand, Nepal, Kenya, Bangladesh, Ethiopia. Walson also sees patients and treats infectious diseases. But just how he ended up here, well, that's quite a story.
I have a lot of young students come to me and sort of want me to help them plan their career path and want to know how I did it and how they can do it. And it's just interesting to look back and realize how I could never in a million years have planned it the way it turned out.
Judd Walson started on that path not because he grew up wanting to be a doctor. In fact, he grew up wanting to be a magician.
By the time I was in my early teenage years, I was performing at local birthday parties for kids and things of that nature, and was hired by some magicians out of Florida when I was, I believe, 15, to travel from Florida to California and back for a summer. And really, that was my first experience with what it would be like to actually semi-professionally do magic. I think fundamentally, it was mostly about the response I got from other people and just the surprise and the ability to really make other people smile, not in the way that a comedian makes people smile and laugh, but really to recognize sort of the magic in the world around them and that there's something unexplainable. My plans in high school could probably be summarized best as saying that I had no plans in high school. I really wasn't really sure I wanted to go to college. So I actually left and I ended up going to England and rapidly figured out that I wasn't going to survive very long on the very little amount of money I had. And so because I had this history of doing magic, I decided to go try street performing. So I spent the next 7 months or so in Europe, traveling all over Europe from Scandinavia to Italy and Greece and all through Central Europe and Western Europe, just street performing. And there wasn't anything future, past driving me. It was really sort of a living day-to-day, moment-to-moment in a really wonderful, free way. And I remember that was just really exciting. I think I also, though, working on the streets was a lot of exposure to people who didn't have long-term plans, as I said, was a positive, but also started to become a negative. And I started to really feel as though this wasn't a life that I could see myself pursuing forever. I can remember we were in Brussels, Belgium. We ended up going around to some other street performers and asking them if there was a cheap place to stay. And one of them said, oh, you can just come back and stay with me. And we got in his van and we ended up driving through this forest, sort of in the dark. And we sort of arrived at this house in the middle of a pretty dark street. And he said to us, no, my mom lives upstairs, so just be quiet and we'll get settled downstairs. So we went in and I remember this incredible, overwhelming smell of being in a hospital. So we went to sleep, and when I woke up in the morning, the entire apartment was just littered with ether bottles. And it turned out that he was addicted to sniffing ether. And he had been in prison for auto robbery before and had been addicted to heroin before that. And I think I remember, that was one moment where I remember thinking, wow, this is a really tough life. And I think that was the moment when I sort of was done with the street performing.
Judd Walson went back to college and, inspired by his travels, took up cultural anthropology. That led him to Nepal as part of a study abroad program. He fell in love with the place and returned there after graduating to continue his research.
A lot of these communities were, you know, days walk from the nearest road, so they were quite remote. These are villages with no running water, no electricity. Many people at that time who had never actually seen electricity or a bicycle or a car. And there were really, really limited amounts of grain and other food production. And so we saw tremendous amounts of malnutrition among children particularly. And I think I started to think about whether I wanted to be someone who described things, a descriptive scientist like an anthropologist, or if I wanted to be someone who intervened and actually tried to change things. One day we were on our way up to one of the more remote villages, and when a guy came running down the path who I knew, and he was sort of in a panic, and he said that, you know, his wife had been gored by a yak, and she was 8 months pregnant. Despite the fact that at that point I had no medical training, because I was working with health-related projects, I think there was sort of an expectation that I would know what to do. And so for the next, you know, almost day, I sort of rushed up the mountain with Danu to go see what we were going to do for his wife. And that whole time, I can just remember in my head this terrible feeling of uncertainty as to what I could possibly offer and what was going to confront me when I went into this hut and found this woman who'd been gored by a yak who's pregnant, and just a real feeling of helplessness and paralysis. We got there and she had been gored through the leg and pretty severe wound, but we were able to sort of stabilize the bleeding and get her down to the capital, and she delivered a healthy baby and, you know, on term. And that period of trying to get up to the village and feeling all the thoughts going through my head made me realize that, you know, you don't go into global health because you intend to do well. It's not enough. You go into global health or global development, I think, with a real desire to understand how you actually can make a difference and to have the skills to do that. And I think that was an experience that really, I think, highlighted for me that I really needed to do more than want to do something good for others. I had to learn the skills to do it.
That realization gave Walson a clarity that he hadn't had before. He applied to medical school with a special concentration in public and global health, and that, in turn, took him abroad once again.
So after all of this, I ended up moving to Kenya for almost 3 years. And I was starting to help set up some pediatric child HIV clinics in Africa. And it was quite stressful. There were a lot of kids dying. You know, a mother losing a child is the same everywhere. It is so painful. And that pain is no different for a woman in Kenya than it is for a woman in Seattle. But what's different is the expectation of what's going to happen to the child. So here, I think all of us, if our child became severely ill, we would take them to Children's Hospital or Harborview or wherever we go with the expectation that our child will recover. And when a child doesn't recover, it's quite shocking in the US. And in many parts of the world, because that's not the case, the expectation is different. There is a lot of uncertainty about how likely it is that your child will recover, what that even means. And that's something we can change. That's something we can change. And so I think we, you know, really helping other people get to a place where they don't have to live with that sort of uncertainty is something that's really quite important. I think in any of our lives, much of our ability to convince others comes not only from our expertise and our education and our resume and all of those things, but there's a large component of our ability to tell stories and to engage people in the stories that we tell. And in global health, I think a lot of what we do is convincing people that global health should be a priority and that we should care. When you're performing magic, you have to believe what you're doing. That's sort of the critical component of misdirection, is that your own mind is following not what's happening behind the scenes, that's the trick, but it's following what you want the audience to believe is happening on stage. So you almost have to get into a mindset where you believe exactly what you want the audience to believe and carry them along with that story. And I think that that translates when I'm speaking with people and having to hold an audience's attention and bring them along and get them engaged is a really big part of why I've been able to do the same in global health, get people excited, get people engaged and motivated to make a difference in the world.